Ed Park, we're kind of mixed into this situation because my father was a lawyer who did a very tiny amount of criminal law. Your father's a psychiatrist who has been involved in one of the most high-profile cases around here in many years, which I covered as a reporter. And now I'm reading your book, Buffalo Noir, and you finished editing it. There must be a lot of material when you read these stories.
Yes, there is a lot of sort of dark corners about the city, the different neighborhoods. The collection has such a diverse group of voices and telling stories in different styles and of different eras and time periods. It's really this kind of fascinating mosaic of the city where I was born and raised. And that's, I think, secretly one of the reasons I wanted to do this book. I don't live in Buffalo anymore, but I kind of wanted to reconnect with the city on a slightly different level and sort of imagine the city in literature, in the form of these short and often very intense fictions. So that's sort of the impetus behind putting the book together.
Obviously, some of these people are pretty well known. I mean, Lawrence Block, who's from here but has written, I don't know, it's got to be 100 books, mostly about New York. Gary Earl Ross is a fairly well-known writer here. And, of course, Joyce Carol Oates, who has come a long way from her roots in Lockport and Niagara County to the peak of the American literary scene and her post at Princeton.
Yes, definitely. I really have been a fan of Lawrence Block's for many years. And, you know, he's an incredible writer. He's very prolific, as you say. And I think part of the attraction was also that at some level, I knew he was from Buffalo. He doesn't write about it that much at all in his novels, but he's always worn his sort of Buffalo, his native Buffalo allegiance on his sleeve. And we, you know, over the years, I've lived in New York for a while now. We've become friendly. And he was one of the first folks I contacted to be in the book, and he was so eager to do it. It was really heartening. Joyce Carol Oates, my co-editor Bridget Hughes, reached out to her, and there's a fantastic story in here by her. Another writer who is fairly prominent in the mystery community who is not currently resident in Buffalo is S.J. Roseanne, who has edited a couple of other volumes in this noir series. And I happened to be doing a literary reading with her in Upper Manhattan in New York. And I told her I was editing this collection, Buffalo Noir. And she said, I used to live in Buffalo. And she was an architecture student at UB. And so soon enough, she sent a really wonderful story called Parkside, which is in the collection.
Considering the history of the building that the architecture school at UB hopes to move back into next year, when it was the poor farm and everything else, there are stories on Hayes, Crosby, and Foster at UB, the past. And, of course, you have Lisa Marie Redmond, who's a Buffalo cop, cold case, all of this stuff, writing mystery. And there's a long tradition of police officers essentially writing about what they did.
She is a fantastic new find, among some others in this book. And she came to this collection. I was recommended. Her name was suggested to me from a couple different sources, if I remember. And she had this story, which I discovered last night during this discussion we had at Hall Walls, was actually not based on one of her cases. She's got, you know, file cabinets worth of fascinating cases that she's worked on. But this was actually something that I believe a relative of hers had a newspaper clipping from, I think, 1937 that is actually the germ of this story. Even though Lisa updates it, so it's more or less contemporary, this actual event is many decades in the past. And so, you know, Lisa brings her own experience to this story, but the inspiration actually came from a rather interesting historical source.
There is a fairly well-known mystery about murder in South Buffalo by a guy who's originally from South Buffalo, and his most recent book was a murder in North Buffalo, a writer named Talty.
Stephen Talty, of course. Yeah. And I would also had I known that the writer Sandra Block was working on mysteries, she's a local she's a Buffalo physician who's also published a couple of thrillers in the last year or so, and I would have loved to have included her as well.
Now, this Buffalo Noir book is part of a long series, and I've had other authors in here over the years from different versions, different geographic noirs. This seems to be a change. There's been much more interest in mysteries in recent years about less New York City or less, you know, less Raymond Chandler sort of thing, and more focused on localized stories, Indian reservations out west. Somebody's probably writing about murder on Staten Island, or at least the mafia and murder on Staten Island. Is it because of computers and this that people can write and sell stories and books about where they live?
That's an interesting angle. I would have to think about that. I think, you know, partly the popularity of the series, I think, is that noir is where you look for it. And I think, who doesn't like film noir? Who doesn't like, you know, the Maltese Falcon or whatever? There's this, I think what's liberating about the series is it gives, once the concept is in place, you invite a writer, for example, I'm looking at the cover, Kim Ching Kui, who is a local writer, but really known for her flash fictions, very, very short stories, kind of exquisitely made stories that are sometimes just 2 pages or so, or even less. But you say, write a story set in Buffalo that's a noir, and it gets the storytelling engine running. And there are a couple writers like that who aren't in this collection who aren't known for noir, but everybody has a response to it. And I think the concept Buffalo noir, you just walk around the city, you look at these buildings, you think of sort of the history lurking right under the surface. You mentioned the new architecture building. There's so much there. There's so much history. There's so much mystery and menace and layers of shadows going on that I think it's a perfect fit for Buffalo. And to speak to your larger question, you can find that in other places as well.
Well, I lived in Allentown and saw the bubbles coming out of the bubble machine with this in the short story in Buffalo Noir, the very ambiguous ending of the story of what happened in Allentown.
Yes.
How many stories did you look at putting this book together?
Well, that's a to be honest, this has been a project several years in the making, so I don't really know. There were definitely more than made the book, but I also felt like the stories that we got, you know, there was some came in obviously like more or less pristine, and others needed some work, but it was lovely working with these authors, and I'm really happy with what's come out of it. I feel like there's a moment when you're editing a book and you're kind of shining the headlights just, you know, a couple feet ahead or a couple pages ahead, and you're kind of getting to the end of the story. But to see it all together and sort of also, you know, tied together in this wonderful package with the map and this, I think this sort of really eye-catching cover art is really quite an experience, and I'm very happy with the way. Happy is not even the word. I'm overjoyed with just how strong the book is.
It's interesting that one of the things that isn't much in the book, and maybe it's because it's so recent, is the immigrant experience in Buffalo. There's very little of that.
There could have been more, and maybe there'll be a Buffalo Noir too. And that's something that I've been reading about. As I said, I live in New York City, but I do keep tabs on what's going on here. And so I am aware of that. And I think that would be actually fertile ground for another installment.
We've all been in situations where someone says, I could write a book about that.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually don't. Or
maybe this is time for someone to do it. I would also say, you know, my parents are immigrants. I was born in Buffalo, but they settled in Buffalo in the late 60s, and they still live here, and my father is still a doctor here, and I bring in a when you say immigrant experience, I talk about this a little bit in my introduction to the book. Buffalo is very close to my heart. I consider myself, no matter how long I've lived in Manhattan, I do consider myself a Buffalonian at heart. And there's a way, though, that growing up, I also looked at, kind of saw Buffalo through an outsider's eyes as well. And I think it was important for me to kind of write about that in the introduction to this collection.
Well, your parents moved here just at the time when, to a great extent, the old ethnic neighborhoods were breaking up.
Sure.
Much more fluid community than it had been even a few years before the late 60s.
Yeah.
One of the issues in writing you read about is people say, well, I can't write a book, but I can write a short story. And this great debate about whether a novel is really an extended short story or whether the best way to tell a story is in 750 words. I used to write newspaper stories of 750 words, and it's not that easy to get something down to 750 words. Different writing styles are. Is there a lesson to the average citizen who says, I want to write something, in being able to put a short story together to talk about a murder or a violent event or whatever?
Sure. I think everybody has a story in them. I think, you know, the question of putting it down on paper or writing it, you know, on your computer screen, as it were, you know, that's going to be that's going to vary from person to person based on a lot of different factors. I think if we're talking about sort of the best advice I could give for aspiring short story writers is to read a lot of short stories. And that sounds maybe a bit obvious or cliche, but there is something to reading masters of the form, people who are really good at it, that, you know, you might never get to that level, but it will give you some sort of framework or some sort of target, I would say, for your own work. And, you know, people will have differences in terms of the quality of the sentences and so forth and the shape of the story. But I think that knowing what's out there and what's good and what you personally like to read, whether it's, you know, whether it's a mystery or whether it's sort of quote unquote literary fiction, whether it's a poem or, you know, or whether it's a short story versus a novel, I think that gives you, when you sort of click on that switch that, that says, you know, I want to write something, it's really important to have those models in mind, those heroes in mind, I would say.
There's a thriving industry in cozy mysteries. You know, the bed and breakfast owner who solves murders on Saturday afternoon and the bookstore owner who shuts early to go solve a murder. But somebody's writing them and somebody's reading them. If you look at one of these books, and it'll be the third installment in a series, you realize that there's something to that character that triggered a reader interest, got past all of the strange aspects of the publishing business and got the book printed and got it in the libraries or into the bookstore. Is there a message to someone who reads about, a guy who runs a general store on an Indian reservation somewhere out west? People say, you know, I'd like to write a story about a general store on Fillmore Avenue, sort of thing. Is there a certain incentive to people that they can do this?
I'm laughing because I'm thinking of one of my favorite shows is this show Grantchester, which is it's a crime-solving vicar in England. And
there are a couple of series of books about American vicars. Yeah. There's one set in Eastern New York.
I wouldn't think that it was inherently something I'd be interested in, but there's something about, I think, speaking to your question, like, if you know the milieu, if you know, let's say, the day job that this you know, kind of amateur sleuth, what he or she does, you know, during working hours, I think if you can bring that level of detail and that level of observation, you can make anything interesting. And I think there's something to be said for detectives who are perhaps also engaged in another line of work, perhaps a more mundane line of work. And I think that's part of the fantasy, too. Like, I am a, you know, liquor store owner by day, and by night I solve crimes. There's that, I think that really taps in strongly with this, the kind of maybe the fantasy aspect of it. Like the reader thinking, oh, I live a normal life, but maybe secretly I'm a crime fighter. I'm somebody who can solve these tough cases.
Well, it's an increasingly complicated society where you can spend 3 hours in the evening reading a mystery where everything gets resolved. The bad guy gets caught, or the bad woman gets caught, and justice triumphs, and Raymond Chandler's detective walks back out into the fog and down the street as still the good man.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a lot of the appeal for many, many kinds of mysteries and thrillers, I would say. And, you know, this actually, though, brings up a thought about the nature of noir, which is, I think, the feeling often at the end that things don't get resolved, that the good guy doesn't win, the case, you know, gets solved in some ways and in other ways not. And I think that's where sort of the shadows creep in, and you are maybe not quite as, you're maybe more unsettled than you bargained for at the beginning of the story.
Well, but that was the attraction of noir movies in the 40s and 50s, like that series that was running on TCM this summer. Always in black and white, always dark, mostly in New York. And you know things are really getting bad for the person who did it when the cop says, "Get your hat, we're going downtown."
Right.
And in those days, everybody wore a hat, you know, that sort of thing. But there is a sense also of how much gray there is in life.
Definitely. And I think that is also the appeal. Nobody's life is without ambiguity. Nobody's life is kind of perfectly understandable. And I think noir fiction and noir film, these are ways that people think it's, you know, on some level, oh, it's entertainment. I'm reading a novel. I'm watching a movie. But there's something that we are responding to on a deeper and maybe even subliminal level.
Is there a particular noir writer or mystery writer that you really think has that sense of life's ambiguities?
I think there are many. I think, well, one writer who comes to mind is Cornell Woolrich, who, you know, very prolific and, you know,
forgotten.
Somewhat forgotten. You know, obviously, his stories are the basis for Rear Window. He wrote many novels and many short stories. Somewhat of a unusual character in his own right. For a while, I used to go, when I was living in kind of upper Manhattan, I would get my hair cut, this old Greek barber. And when he heard, this was, you know, in the 90s, when he heard that I was a writer, he said, oh, I used to cut Cornell Woolrich's hair. And he said, my wife wouldn't let me start one of his books at night because I would be up all night reading it and not be able to sleep. And that was actually I'd heard the name Woolrich, and that's when I started reading him. And I think he's a really, if not underrated, somewhat forgotten writer that I think people would, you know, benefit from reading.
I don't know if it's still there, but there used to be a really good mystery bookstore up on the Upper West Side.
The Upper West Side one has closed, alas, but there is one downtown, the Mysterious Bookshop.
Now, Ed, do you have something of your own coming out other than editing Buffalo Noir?
Well, yes, and there are a couple answers to that question. I'm also a book editor at Penguin Press, and so some of the books that I've been editing, that I've been working on, are coming out beginning in January. The first one is called The Portable Veblen by a wonderful author named Elizabeth McKenzie. In terms of my own writing, I have a novel and a story collection that will be out, probably not for at least another year or so, but the novel is called Same Bed, Different Dreams, and the story collection will follow sometime thereafter.
We've been talking to Ed Park, who's the co-editor of Buffalo Noir. Ed, glad to have you here.
So nice to be here. Thanks for having me.